Hello and welcome everybody to Specialist of Specially Special episodes of MTG Potpourri. And bring in the special, I have Conley Woods.
Not special.
This is you. Usually you say hi. And then we have Adam Staborski.
I refuse to take direction from Tom just on principle that it's taking direction from Tom.
You should take it when you get it. So that's the opposite. You should be like, oh my God, it's, you know, once in a, it's like a Friday the 13th with a full moon. It happens like once every 40 years. You should just be like, thank you, Tom. Thank you for a smidge of direction for a couple of seconds. So
my lawyer has advised me to not comment.
You're like a Wizards PR person. Don't say anything. Just sit there quietly in the chat room. Okay. Even though it seems like Wizards PR has kind of started to lighten up a little bit on their rules about having staff appear, let's say, like on podcast interviews, which potentially is a positive thing. I was kind of curious why that suddenly seemed to change over about the last 6 to 12 months. So I'd say 3 years ago, the chance of Aaron Forsythe being on a podcast was zero.
Really?
Yes. I mean, if we went back like 4 or 5 years to do an interview with a, just because I did a bunch of, if you had to do an interview with a Wizards, an actual employee, you usually had to set up through their head of PR. You'd actually, whoever you're interviewing would apparently go into some sort of like a call conference room. I mean, it's probably a broom closet / bathroom. So they would be there. The PR person would be listening, and I would have to call into their little call center. And then everything was basically supervised live by the PR person.
I didn't realize how big of a pain in the ass it was.
It was enormously pain in the ass.
Fair enough.
And yeah, at some point, I think I mentioned the infamous Devin Lowe interview, but at some point I'll try to see if I can actually dig up the content, because it is just painfully awkward to listen to for about 30 minutes. So, Adam, you actually are the news hound dog of the week, because you actually dug up some news. Conley and I did jack squat to prepare for this show. So
not a thing.
Yeah. Just because it's kind of a downtime. So, Adam, lead us, guide us. You are the shining light. You are my early morning soap opera during the week.
I think that's terrible, Tom.
Take off your shirt.
That's awful. Flex.
I have to admit, I was really into Days of Our Lives for a short period. That would be sort of late high school, early 20s.
The B-movie aficionado who loves awful likes daytime soap opera.
They are the B-movie of television. I'd say they're even more B-movie than reality TV. At least reality TV is just terrible out of the block. Soap operas, they're filmed like a movie. I mean, it has that different look than like other TV shows. They have these ridiculous plots that have to go on forever just to kill airtime. They are truly the B-movie of daytime TV. Probably why I like them.
That's exactly what I was saying.
Yeah, I was just agreeing with you in a very long-winded fashion.
Of course. So I didn't have to dig for news, per se. It just kind of like gets dumped on my lap. We got some new M15 cards.
Just like a Chipotle sink. Just gets dumped on.
Nobody was here pre-cast, Tom.
They didn't listen to her. To our 10-minute pooping in a sink conversation that we had.
They did not. It's good that you informed them that those things occur.
Yeah. If you kind of wondered are we talking, you know, meta, you know, what do you cyborg in versus X, Y, and Z? No, it's pooping in a sink, and how do you do it?
All right. Well, back to
I am never playing that format. That sounds like the shittiest format ever.
I imagine Conley like planking where there's like maybe like a hand dryer. And I don't like the baby changing station. He was planking on those two while pooping into the sink. I think that would be impressive. A, just to poop while planking. That would be a challenge. Because you have to clench some things and unclench others. That's almost kind of like a ninja power.
All right. This horse is no longer recognizable as a horse. It has been beaten into just this bloody mulch.
Yeah, I'll summarize it up. Pooping in the sink. Okay, Adam.
Pooping in the sink. Basically this week, one tonight and two a couple nights ago, we got confirmation on some of the cards in Magic 2015. So we've known from the first Duels of the Planeswalkers 2015 promo that there seems to be a new cycle of kind of like Titan-like cards, 6 mana 6/6s that are mythic and they come with some bonus abilities. The blue and the green one have been revealed. So if you haven't seen them yet, they're up on all the spoilers. But Soul of Ravnica, it's a 6/6 flying for 6 mana. You can pay 7 mana, 5 and 2 blue, and draw a card for each color among permanents you control. So if you're if you're playing a five color commander deck, this is kind of like pay seven mana, draw five cards. It's pretty much what that reads. And then what's interesting is all of them come with this second ability where you can basically pay that same amount of mana and exile it from your graveyard to get the effect. So even if it gets countered or, you know, it trades in combat or somehow dies and you can't do anything with it sitting in your graveyard, you get this ability to exile it from there and get something for it. The green one's one that I like a lot more because I love tokens, but it's a 6/6 with reach for 4/2 green. And for 5 mana, 3/2 green, you get to put a 3/3 beast creature token into play. So 5 mana for a 3/3 is not that exciting, but like that'll just take over a game of limited. It seems like just like a really stupid bomb. And then the other ability, of course, is you can exile from the graveyard to get a 3/3. So if you've ever played against Thrag Tusk, this is just a really slow, cumbersome, doesn't gain you life Thrag Tusk, but still seems pretty good. You're just always going to be able to generate a threat from this card.
And more. Go ahead, Colin.
I was just saying, importantly, these things are like must deal with threats immediately when they hit play. Much of Titans where you cannot afford to let them untap with these because they're going to get their ability. The blue one's going to draw some amount of cards. The green will start putting 3/3s into play. So you actually do need it immediately. But the most important thing about these is those abilities from the graveyard are their abilities. They are not spells. So if you're activating the blue one and exiling it from your graveyard, your opponent cannot cast a counter spell to counter that. That's an uncounted draw five in the right situation. And like it's not even that hard a situation to get into. I have Kiora, a Detention Sphere, one other, I guess, reasonable Ash or something, and I'm drawing four cards on it. And like, maybe that's not the right deck for it or whatever, but that's pretty much irrelevant. You have an uncounterable draw X amount of cards sitting in your graveyard for seven mana. It's pretty absurd. The Beast one's pretty nice too. Kind of harkens back to Call of the Herd a little bit, in my opinion, which is kind of nice because he's the type of card where maybe you play him in a Dredge deck because you just want to have a free 3/3. You know, out of the graveyard, you care too much about the main spot, but you just want to use the secondary ability, and that's totally fine. And the fact that we have three more of these things coming, and we don't know what they do, like, pretty excited. Like, they're pretty snazzy in a very spiky way, to be fair. Like, the Titans were you know, Timmy cards. I think these are more spiky cards, but.
And to me, this it also, did you guys ever play with Centaur Glade? It was from Onslaught. Yeah, and that's kind of what it reminded me of, just with a slightly different cost to the ability. So, I mean, obviously, this was kind of announced in connection with them announcing the 2015 Duels of the Planeswalkers. And so I'm assuming we can guess all the other souls because there's five planes that you can basically in the single player campaign of the at least if you watch the E3 video, there's five planes that you go through in the single player campaign. So at least according to that, we should have a Theros, we should have an Innistrad, and I can't remember what the fifth plane is. But I'm assuming if they follow the pattern, we can pretty much guess what all the other souls are. And these are apparently going to be the two promo cards that you get for purchasing. These will be the paper promos like you used to get Garruk and other Planeswalkers. These are what you're going to get for buying Magic 2015 and redeeming your little code.
Yeah, Soul of Ravnica, if you pick it up on Xbox, so whether it's Xbox Live or the 360 or the One, you'll get Soul of Ravnica. And then for all of the other platforms, that includes, you know, Steam, Android, or
iPad. God, born for the iPad. It's like
just great for me because I've got an iPad and I'm definitely going to buy it.
I have to admit, like, even though I had a really old iPad, we finally upgraded to one of the newer ones. Magic 2014 Duels of the Planeswalkers, that almost sells you getting one of the a high def retina display, whatever term you want to use for it, because you can actually read the cards. That was like the one game function that I thought made a huge difference to have the high res display was playing this game. Now, did you guys have a chance to watch even a little bit of the gameplay trailer from E3?
I checked out the multiplayer section, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and it seems like their big selling point is obviously, it was interesting watching the gameplay video when they first announced, or I guess we got some details about the M15 Duels of the Planeswalkers. Honestly, I was really excited because we were going to supposedly be able to fully customize the deck, and somehow people got really concerned, scared, pissed, mad, because somehow there's going to be booster packs with in-app purchases. At least from watching the gameplay video, at least what I got the feeling of is you'd either earn packs through, I guess, gameplay achievements, or you were buying actual like DLC packages. I did not get the feeling that you had to potentially buy single packs. Did you guys get the same feeling from watching any of it?
I guess basically the same thing you said. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm not sure entirely. I know I work for a digital game company, different models they could be using with this. So I'm not going to run through them all, but I don't think that you're going to be required to necessarily purchase packs to play the game or anything like that. I think it'll be mostly DLC type of stuff or potentially trading with multiplayer friends, like that type of stuff. Like you can trade boost packs and things of that nature. But yeah, I don't know.
I guess I greatly enjoy. Oh, go ahead.
Well, Adam. I was gonna say one of the screenshots from the media pack showed the deck construction screen, and it showed a percentage unlocked Chandelure, and it was 70-some%. So it kind of looks like if they follow the model that they followed in all of the series so far, you can go through the campaign, and if you complete the campaign and complete the little challenge things and run through the campaign the second time and do the challenges over again that are harder and different, you can unlock pretty much all of the cards. So the question is there's going to be like booster pack DLC or like booster pack in-app purchases. I'm wondering if unlocking the card isn't the same as unlocking a playset of a card. So you might have access to one of all the cards or multiples of commons or something like that. But I could totally see some sort of booster pack where, like, if you're trying to get multiples of Soul of Zendikar, for example, for like multiplayer, you would have to buy into some sort of system to get all the copies that you want rather than just like whatever you're allowed to unlock.
Okay. I was just kind of curious how they're going to do that balance, because obviously you want, I guess, to push people to play to get the taste of designing decks. And it's also kind of crazy that they're baking in like the store locator and other things kind of right into the main interface, where it feels like there's definitely even more of a push in this version of Duels of the Planeswalkers to get people to make that leap to the paper card game. To me, it felt like there almost should be more of a push to Magic the Gathering online. That to me seems like a more natural transition, but I guess that'd be harder to...
Well, there's a lot of problems there. One, I just don't think that's necessarily a product they're really wanting to advertise right now.
Okay.
Like, it's not finished. I don't think they can support the type of... They don't have the infrastructure to support the type of people that would potentially bring... Duel of Walkers is much more new player friendly, much more attainable by a large crowd. It's much more safe in terms of what it offers and what it can deliver. Just it's all around just a much safer and cleaner, polished product. Magic Online is trying to work that, but it is definitely there yet.
Okay, and I guess too, the community right now might be kind of hostile to the type of new player, so. Maybe like a local game store would probably be much safer, maybe more fun for a brand new player.
Yeah, I mean, one of the other big hurdles is assuming, let's assume that the, Magic Online experience is, it's like a Hearthstone-like experience. It's just really polished, really, really fun for a lot of people. I think that unless there was some way to port your collection over, so like you start on Duels of the Planeswalkers and you unlock all these cards and you've been playing for hours and hours and hours, and then you go to Magic Online and find out, basically, you don't have any cards again, and now you have to pay to buy booster packs and pay to play in events to get anywhere. That's also a big kind of system shock, and I think a disappointment for players if they have one introductory experience and have a totally different one. I think there's a mismatch there too.
I guess it makes sense. You logically wouldn't expect to be getting a bunch of cards showing up at a physical store, but you might expect that going to just a different digital way of playing Magic. So, I mean, overall, I'd say I'm excited. You mentioned you watched the multiplayer part. Was there a specific mode or anything that has you excited in the multiplayer area?
Well, no, just the fact that, four people can now play, right? Like,
That's something I swear I could do even on the original Duels of the Planeswalker for the Xbox, like 360, when I first tried it out.
They had four-player games?
I swear we did, because I played with a bunch of people from Scotland.
They've had Arch Enemy and Plane Chase as multiplayer modes before.
Really? On Duels of Planeswalkers?
Yes.
Okay. I've never actually played the full duels. I've only ever played the demos, which is just the campaign / whatever that small mission achieving thing. But never like full on multiplayer, so I guess I wouldn't know. But I just thought a pretty big deal out of it in the presentation, showing off like all the tech creatures and their new pills or anything like that. So I assume it's a brand new mode to it. But I guess they were just really happy with the way it looks now, like, or something like that.
Yeah, and definitely the look of the game has a little bit of a, I guess, a different flavor. They really talked a lot about the black and white art style.
Yeah.
I guess, I don't know, for, I seems like the people that are going to be playing that game, I almost feel like they could care less about that part. They just want a really nice sort of tabletop interface for playing the game. But, I mean, if it comes out for the same, like between $10 to $20 again, it's going to be pretty amazing value, kind of almost no matter what type of player you are. Just be able to, again, being more of a casual gamer, is just be able to plop down and play 20 minutes on your iPad or your whatever Android tablet you have. That is really slick. And to, I guess theoretically now you could play, you know, actual Magic the Gathering online on pretty much everything with thing like the like Steam Play. I mean, it seems like we actually now could play Magic the Gathering online on some really weird devices, like your TV, if you want to.
Yeah.
Not sure if you'd enjoy it or it'd be fun, but I think it'd be kind of cool to see that on some sort of huge screen. So I'm curious how it would scale up, like on some sort of enormous crazy display. Like if somebody busted like a 4K TV, would all the text be the size of like grains of rice? Just because scaling is not an easy thing, because currently even Windows doesn't really get it right. And that's an operating system. What's one of the key features we should get right? That people should be able to read the shit on the screen? Yeah, I'd say that's pretty high. Well, we didn't get it right, guys. Well, that's what 8.1's for.
Wow.
All right.
So,
Thomas to breed is Microsoft, apparently.
I interned for them. So, in some ways, I do like Microsoft, but every once in a while, I just be like, I can only imagine sort of this trying to get anything done in a systemized fashion in some sort of like a monolithic, well established business like that. I think it must be very frustrating for some of these developers there. I just want to be able to read the text. No, make more Metro Live tiles. You're like, God damn it. I don't need to see my weather on a live tile. I need to be able to read the text. But anyways, I'm getting off track again, which is hard to believe. But I'm reining myself in, guys. This is a new Tom. We have one more M15 card for us to talk about.
Yeah, this one just came out tonight before we're recording. So this is also from E3. It's kind of like a closing or follow-up, ooh, if you will.
And congratulations to Rob Pardo. You designed the hell out of the card.
So this one was courtesy of Game Informer. This is Zathrid Slyblade. It's a 2 and a black for 2/1 hexproof. So right there, just without anything else, people are just going to go, wow, this card is absolutely awful, and I can't believe they're still using hexproof on small creatures. But the ability it has is actually really fun. It kind of makes me laugh. So it's 3 and a black. Until end of turn, Zathrid Slyblade loses hexproof and gains first strike and death touch. So you imagine this is kind of, you know, it's a creature human assassin. So you can imagine this is like somebody steps out of the shadow and just like stabs someone running down the alley. Like, I'm going to charge you. And then just boop comes out, and now they're not hidden. They're out in the open. You can get them, but they just step out of the shadow and just bam, kill something.
Now, is this something that's been confirmed with M15 that the cards are going to be basically flavored from one of their sort of five planes that they're channeling? Like this one just smells of Innistrad. We got the vampire bat in the back.
Zathrid isn't Innistrad.
Well, I'm just saying, like, the creature
been in the core set before. I think it's, I want to say it's Chandelar.
Zathrid's in the last corset. Zathrid Necromancer is in the very last corset.
Well, the last corset was set on Chandelar, because the kind of the story update we got there is with the Return of Slivers, that was like the big to-do. The Slivers are now on Chandelar for some reason and seem to be invading. So,
and just in case anybody doesn't know, Rob Pardo is the chief creative officer at Blizzard, which is a little strange since Blizzard is making, I guess in my mind, a competing product with Hearthstone.
So I would not say they're a competing product, but...
You don't think so? I would say, especially if you're talking about Duels of the Planeswalkers, I would say yes. These are both
they
games...
They're about as competing a product as Chuck E. Cheese is to, like, a, you know, sit-down pizza restaurant that's serving in candles. Like, do they seem technical product? Yes, but they do not appeal to the same audience in any way, shape, or form.
So, I guess, what audience do you feel... But I just to defend your idea, because I think you're wrong, is what audience does Hearthstone appeal to, and what audience does, I guess Duels of the Planes would appeal to.
I would say that Hearthstone appeals more casual gamers, moving to core gamers, and Magic is core and hardcore gamers only. Like, Magic is a game, Hearthstone is like an activity.
But I say Duels of the Planeswalkers, I guess it seems like that's not being designed for that hardcore player. This is for that.
I was not referring to Duels of the Planeswalkers specifically. I was referring to Magic whole. If you're referring to just the Planeswalkers, I see there being more overlap there. But Duels of the Planeswalkers is really just a ship to people to play Magic. It's a starting point. So I don't really, like, it typically is its own product, but they're basically trying to sell you Magic by you in the door, big, flashy, awesome product. So I kind of view Duels of the Planeswalkers as just Magic. And that way, Magic and are different to me. If you're looking at the little set of only Duels of the Planeswalkers, as in people that will only play duels and never upgrade to a more full Magic experience, then yes, they probably do over in terms of their audience.
Okay. I just thought it was interesting. As I'm trying to think what, I guess there really isn't a big competing CC, like paper CCG right now.
Just to clarify what I'm saying, I think Hearthstone being around helps Magic more than it hurts Magic. So, like, take that as, like Hearthstone is effectively an onboarding tool. It is Duels of the Planeswalkers that appeals to an entirely different audience because of its IP, aka Warcraft, that setting. Because of that, it basically is a Duels of the Planeswalkers onboarding tool that will get people to play Magic by getting them to play that game instead of duels. So people that would have never seen Duels of the Planes to Magic through Hearthstone in the same way that people that are told Magic and told Duels of the Planes walk to Magic.
Okay. I guess I can kind of see where, I mean, Hearthstone, I think, has a lot of great ideas. It just inherently just doesn't have the card pool to get the complexity that Magic has. So I could see people maybe sort of just burning through Hearthstone, exactly. Kind of absorbing that strategy, be like, okay, this is, I get these CCGs now. I want to dive into just the insanity. And where's the insanity? Oh, that's this game that's been doing weird shit for 20 years. I'm going to go try that.
Yeah, exactly.
I get it.
I wouldn't even say even insanity. It's like it's kind of like,
if you're new, to Magic, it's insane.
If you're new, it can definitely be insane. That's true. But it's kind of like a kid's table. It's like, you know, you graduated up and now you kind of get to, you understand all stuff. Just because, I mean, nobody's saying Hearthstone better again than Magic. Nobody. Like, might enjoy Hearthstone better, but, like, basically everybody agrees that Magic is just, like, the game of all time. Like, is it complex? Yes, part of that is because 20 years of history has built it into a complex monster, and it necessarily didn't really start off as a simple game ever. But, you know, at the same time, those 20 years are what makes Magic awesome at the point, too. So it's kind of a double-edged sword that we all just kind of accept. But I think Hearthstone is great for the trading card game industry in general, digital card game, if you want to call that. It's like an awesome thing to expose a lot more players to, and people will play more people will play Magic as a little Hearthstone, and for that I'm totally happy to have it around.
Do you think a better comparison potentially, Conley, would be the XFL and the NFL? Or the XFL in some ways did have some good ideas, a little bit more exciting, but it just didn't have the history and the resources that, say, like the NFL did.
The XFL was
awesome.
That's true. XFL was fun to watch. I don't think that's fair because I think Blizzard has the resources. I think Blizzard specifically is aiming to appeal to the demographics of WoW, which is the casual and light core gamers, which is something like Chuck E's does not sell the best pizza in the world because they're not looking to sell refined adult pizza. They're looking to sell children pizza and play in ball pits. If you go to the fine Italian restaurant that wants to give you like candlelit dinner with a fresh baked pizza made to your order, whatever, that's selling the same type of food, but it is selling it in a very different manner because they're appealing to adults with alcohol, etc. So it's just what I'm saying is, like, literally the angle that Hearthstone wants to appeal to is not even quite the same angle as Magic. Now, it is probably the same as Duels of Planeswalkers, so for that you're correct, but it's mostly just that, like, nobody really leave Magic for Hearthstone. People might play Hearthstone while they play Magic, but there will be plenty of people that leave Hearthstone for Magic. Like, it's just okay. It's going to happen.
Yeah, it makes sense. All I'm saying is I'm calling dibs on the New York / New Jersey Hitmen. That was clearly the best team in the XFL. Just because it was racist. And I guess
there was like one Canadian team, right? Or two Canadian teams?
I have the Eastern and Western Division. I actually pulled up the page to make sure I had all the teams. We had the Orlando Rage, the Chicago Enforcers, the New York, New Jersey Hitmen, the Birmingham Thunderbolts. Then in the Western Division, we had the Los Angeles Extreme, no E, just a big X. For XFL. We had the San Francisco Demons. That one I thought was actually kind of interesting. I don't know if that would fly today. We had the, just, We have the Memphis Maniacs, and that's M-A-N-I-A-X, XFL. And then we have the Las Vegas. The X's are annoying. This is also like the age of like Surge and yeah, just all that junk. And then last but not least, we have the Las Vegas Outlaws. And we had to give credit and congratulations to the Los Angeles Extreme, who won the final game, which was called the $1 Million Game, in their one season.
There was exactly one season. Vince McMahon was the one who had that thing going on.
Yeah, and at least according to the statistical leaders, Tommy Maddox was apparently the Babe Ruth of the quarterbacks in the XFL. He pretty much had every single passing thing you could get. So congratulations, Tommy Maddox. You wonder what some of these XFL players are doing. You know, a lot of them are probably dead from drug use and drug overdose. All right.
So before we jump off this tangent, because this is
the XFL is not a tangent. This is why we live life.
So I'm gonna give you a tangent that comes back on itself. So it's a circle.
Is it Mobius? Is it a Mobius tangent? They're the rarest.
This is a Mobius tangent. Your mind is going to be blown. So Tom,
oh, that's a title.
What do you think of when I talk about Cracker Jack?
I would say I think of I would assume most people would have said the treat. I think of like a little boy with a dog because it's on the box, but it makes me sound like a pedophile.
Right, but the iconic, delicious caramel, you know, almond popcorn.
Or baseball games. I always eat Cracker Jack at a baseball game. So right. Baseball game too.
Yeah, this classic piece of like, you know, 1950s Americana.
Okay, so the Mobius ending to this is still it's still misted.
So you're talking about the XFL like back in the Surge days, like back in like the late 90s when like extreme everything was kind of the new thing. So Cracker Jack very recently came out with a line of snacks. They expanded their line, so they still make the iconic Cracker Jacks box and the Cracker Jacks, but they have now Cracker Jacked with an apostrophe D at the end, and basically they are like extreme snacks. The packaging is all black. It's like spicy buffalo ranch, habanero, nut mix. You know, they have other flavors, but it's like this like extreme manly, you know,
this is terrible.
Over the top snacking food. So
this is horrible.
Surge, we're still in it. We're living in the piss colored age of extreme. Still.
Makes me sad. So if for you listeners out there who are now salivating at the idea of a manly extreme Cracker Jacked a meal, we have zesty queso. We have PB and chocolate. That looks kind of good. We have cheddar barbecue. That sounds really gross. Berry yogurt. Then we have, those are all hearty mixes. They then also have their intense mix brand, which is Buffalo Ranch and Spicy Pizzeria. And not to be left out, in the solo sweet and savory clusters area, we have salted caramel. And there's a bikini lady. Yeah, this is just wrong. It does have the same little guy, though, on it with his dog, but he's sort of hidden.
See, I thought for sure, like when I saw the package, I saw this at the hospital when my wife was in there, and it was one of the snacks that they had in the cafeteria, the same cafeteria that has giant signs like we're doing, you know, we're making changes for your health. And I'm like, wow, I can buy like this total shite to snack on. Great. But I was really I had to do a double take because the first thing I thought when I thought of Cracker Jack, like updating their logo, is I thought it'd be like the Fallout 3. Iconic look where it's like this, you know, it's like a guy with his dog, but the guy's also holding an assault rifle. Like that's what I expected to see on the package.
They could have gone for a boy and his dog, the classic sci-fi movie where it's post-apocalyptic with the, you guys seen that movie where he has the telepathic dog?
I think I know what you're talking about. It makes me sad that I do.
Yeah, it's incredibly sexist movie. Basically one of the currencies is women. So I would say if you're into kind of any sort of feminism, probably won't enjoy that movie. But it is an interesting 70s sci-fi post-apocalyptic movie.
If by feminism, do you mean treating people equally?
Yeah, we'll say equal rights for sexes.
It's not even, I wouldn't even say a feminist would be offended. It's just like anybody who like is sensible would be offended.
Yeah, there we go.
If you're a reasonable human being, this is not for you.
But it is a classic. You know, there's lots of classic movies that have some very iffy parts to them, but it's still a classic. A Boy and His Dog. And it stars Don Johnson, who is actually a fairly well-known movie actor. That was 1975.
Thank you, Tom, for telling us about your childhood. Back to the show.
Right. Okay, we're still on the Mobius strip. Here, Adam. I'm still viewing where this gets back to magic. I'm all jacked up on Kraken.
No. It was a Mobius strip. It was a Mobius strip tangent to your tangent because you brought up the whole taxonomy. So I said, brought up Cracker Jack out of the blue, but it circled right back around to this extreme crap.
Yeah, and this even will even Mobius the shit back. Where I got a tweet today about how to make your own Ecto Cooler, which is probably arguably the finest high C flavor ever invented.
Disagree.
What is the best? Because again, I need you to defend this very controversial stance you've taken.
I have no counter.
Is Hawaiian Punch different from High C?
Yes. Hawaiian Punch is like its own, I don't know, brand. Well, High C has a bunch of different flavors. I guess you could get it in.
Okay.
And isn't Hawaiian Punch it can also be carbonated? Well, I would say High C is never carbonated. I wouldn't bet.
Hawaiian Punch cannot be carbonated, is it?
I swear you get it in cans that was carbonated.
I don't see
why not. It'd be like a Fruitopia,
sure it does not come carbonated.
Okay, well, listeners, as Adam put in our show notes, we didn't get any emails, and that makes me sad. So email us to tell me I'm wrong, your favorite 90s extreme snack, whatever the hell it is, Orbitz, tell me about your love of Orbitz, whatever it is, email us, and tell us if Hawaiian Punch is carbonated.
It's definitely not carbonated.
And I have a follow-up email request.
Ooh.
So if you don't want to tell us about carbonated beverages from our collective youth. So Gathering Magic just recently ran a voting contest for art for a playmat. Gathering Magic's first playmat. You can read all about it on the site, blah, blah, blah. But my question is a little broader. So we all have like our own magic swag. Like I've got a pile of playmats and I've got, you know, my limited resources sleeves and a bunch of stuff that I've picked up over the years that I really like. I'd be really curious for like what magic swag you guys have and like what you've picked up and what you use and where it came from and why and what you love about it. Pictures, you know, as long as they're not obscene or grotesque, for the love of God.
Damn it. I can't send anything in.
Right.
Yeah. Conley, were you doing the show? We asked a similar question on Monday Night Magic. It was probably like 3-4 years ago of people to send in like their card rooms or their where they played Magic. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
And we got like the crazy like garage photos and.
As much as I don't like to admit that I was on another show with you and somehow foolishly accepted coming back into this one knowing what I was getting into, I do remember that.
God, so those were amazing. Those were like, oh my God, there's probably like kidnapped people in the same room. I'm terrified now.
Yeah, so I don't want to see any criminal rooms or places where like, you lock your children or like, you know, helpers, end quote, that sort all your cards all the time. I just want to see like the really cool swag that you use and why it's really cool to you. Because I think it's super interesting and I haven't seen enough of it.
And Conley, I guess, Adam, you mentioned yours. Conley, do you have any specific swag that you've gotten acquired that?
I mean, I saved all my GP playmats for basically the entire time I've been going to GP. So I have like 40 or 50 playmats rolled up in my closet. So it's kind of cool. I also have like a bunch of, you know, Pro Tours always got a specialty clothing item every time. It's always like a shirt and then something else. Recently, it's been a backpack. But for a while, it was like in Hawaii, they give you swimming shorts. And in like other places, they'll give you a cowboy hat or whatever. So I have a lot of that crap lying around. Then other thing you have is like Planeswalker or Guild Pins. You get like 1,000 Guild Pins per Pro Tour. They just hand them out everywhere. They're like, here you go. You're going to the bathroom, take a Guild Pin. Because they just have too many of them. They don't want to take them back.
What am I supposed to do with it? Just take it to the bathroom. You'll figure it out.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I have all 10 guilds, at least.
I just imagine you pooping in the sink and then sticking a guild pin in it. There you go.
Yeah. So I have a lot of it. I don't really, like, actively swag it up. I wear a lot of, like, Channel Fireball stuff when I'm out and about, and I'll wear some basic Magic logo stuff, but I don't really wear the Planeswalker shirts and stuff, at least as, like, outerwear. I'll wear it, like, under something, but...
So you're wearing Planeswalker underwear?
Well, I don't wear I don't wear too many clothes that like have stuff printed on them anyway, like words and stuff. So I just don't want one with like, you know, Jace's face or Garrick's face.
Yeah, it's hard to get the wife beaters with like, you know, good logos on. So I can say I don't.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see. I guess I don't have a ton of Magic swag. I guess the two things I'd say that I like that I have are very small items. One is I believe it was the first issue ever of Inquest. This was, I don't know if you guys remember, there's actually an Inquest Zero. Did you guys ever read the Inquest Magic magazine, which I greatly enjoyed while it was being printed? I believe it was in the Wizards comic book magazine. They actually had a test trial issue as Inquest Zero that was just attached as like a promotional item. Then the first real bagged copy of Inquest, Inquest number one, they had a little, it's about the size of a credit card, and it was a life counter, where basically it was cardboard, it had a little rotating disc, and went up to 40 life. It had a Minotaur on it. I still have that one. It's my main life counter. It's pretty much worn through, but I still have it because I like it. And the only other really piece of swag is I had, when I was still doing the Monday Night Magic, we had a bunch of people make me custom life counters where they would take like two magic cards, they would glue them together with a life dial in the middle and like cut a little hole out. So I have a bunch of pit imp ones that I think are cool that I can use as a life counter. That's kind of my swag, which sounds kind of sad compared to play mats and shirts and cowboy hats and
No, Tom, you're cool. You're cool. Everyone thinks you're cool. It's fine.
Swim thongs and whatever else you had.
You're fine.
What would be the worst clothing item they could pro tour up for you? Like if you said, if they are giving me this, I'm not going to the pro tour.
Jock strap.
Okay, I would definitely go to the pro tour if they're giving out jock straps. They would have to like literally
it has to be for any gender though. That's why I wonder if that's why they went away from stuff like cowboy. I guess cowboy hats technically are unisex, but swim shorts.
That now they're going to back more cowboy hats than female than males.
I this is science, Tom. Science has proven that more women wear.
I'm cowboys. Just saying, every when you walk down the streets of like Houston, it's just mono females and cowboy hats.
Okay,
maybe you should call them cowgirl hats. I guess
cowgirl hats, cow women. Just be cow.
Don't use the term cow women, or otherwise those feminists you referred to earlier will be back on and have a word with you.
Oh, so cow women is worse than cowgirl?
Cow women does not sound like you're trying to imply that they're. It sounds like.
How about cow miss? How about cow miss and cow ma'am? Hi, cow ma'am.
Reason cow anything human like sounds normal to you is because you administer medicine to cows. Mm-hmm. They're not people, Tom. They're animals. You're a veterinarian.
Pills the size of bowling balls. Here you go. And making them eat magnets. So yeah, cows are strange animals. Yeah, we've beaten this. Emails, we love them.
What do you mean we've beaten it? You've tortured us with this cow talk.
I think you brought it up.
Nope, you did.
Nope, cowboy hats you. Nope, you. So, Adam, what is our email address? If people want to send us pictures of their magic swag, hopefully PG-rated, where would we send that to?
You're going to send it to mtgpotpourri, all one word, at gatheringmagic.com. That's mtgpotpourri at gatheringmagic.com.
God, I love that email address. Just MTG Potpourri. That name grows on me every episode.
But where would you send your R-rated mail to?
Because I still would like to see those.
Tommy Gustafson
at gmail.com.
Just tweet it directly to at PSG Reader on Twitter. Just mention. Don't even follow and try and DM. Don't ask, follow me. I want to share something sensitive and possibly illegal. Just straight up post it from your account to Tom.
It'd be just be like 2 days, you'd be like, this stuff is awesome until you get that one. You just be like, oh God. Where you can't forget it. You're just like, that is sick. But that's how you learn. That's how you learn the depth of human depravity is through Twitter. We got some weird pictures and emails on Eminem every once in a while. You got some weird stuff. Rather not go back to that. I'll be honest with you.
Since our listeners are smart and intelligent and thoughtful and not depraved maniacs, we're not going to have that. We're going to have fantastic emails for next week. That's what's going to happen.
Yes. So we give us a bunch. We love them because, guys, we're kind of at the end of what we were able to dredge up. You got to dredge. It's a mechanic.
So where are we going to be next? Let's close out with upcoming events. So, Conley, I think you're going to be at a Grand Prix next, right?
Yeah, I'll be at Grand Prix Chicago next week. Although, so I'm driving. However,
oh, you could have said flying; it would have fit the. Damn it!
But I'm not flying. I am driving. However, I did have a bit of an accident today in my parking garage as I had to swerve away from an asshole driver who was not where he should have been, and I hit the side of my car on a concrete sealer thing. So I have a gigantic dent and scrape in the side of my car, which I'm not very happy about, considering it's a new car.
And transportation just don't mix. Any sort of motorized transport, just like you ever been on a train and like have it be like.
The worst part was the guy didn't even realize that like what he had done had forced me to like do this. We just like drove off as, you know, down the ramp out of the garage as if like nothing had happened. It was the worst. But so I have to get my insurance to fix that. So I might be driving a rental car out to Chicago. I'm not sure. But regardless, I'll be out there playing the Grand Standard. The week after that is DC, Grand Prix in DC, which will be limited, and I will be there. And then I have a bit of a break, and then Boston's coming up relatively soon.
I'm going to be at DC too. I'm going to be working on the coverage team with Corbin Hustler and a bunch of the regular video guys. You don't see me on camera because apparently that's not a cool thing. I'm not a camera personality.
Are they looking for a color guy, Adam? People that could provide color and non-magic related content?
I am not going to touch that with a
torch. Oh, God. I'd make it about 5 minutes on video.
But I am excited because I'm actually going to Boston, too. And it's not his coverage. Bruce Richard, a guy that I met through writing, and he wrote, you know, Musessel, and he was on the Star City Talent Search for writers, you know, eons ago, and he wrote on Gathering Magic, and now he took over Serious Fun, so I could just spend my time reading crazy feedback about Commander, which is way cooler.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so he writes Serious Fun now. He lives just outside Boston, so. So I'm just going to jump up there and he's going to pick me up and put me up for the weekend. So I'm going to do a Serious Fun conspiracy draft, and I'm going to hang out and kind of enjoy the GP there. So, yeah.
Wow. Are you bringing the newborn with you then?
No.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I thought about it. But then when I checked, my mammary glands are non-existent and don't produce milk, I realized I'd have a very tough time.
You can pump, dude. I have taken breast milk in a little refrigerator bag through the airport.
Stop. All right. Back to
it. Was weird when they tasted it though. To make sure it was real.
Stop. I tried to stop it. I knew.
Okay. Should we talk about the storage of breast milk? The shelf life.
Can we talk about magic stuff? Go back to the magic stuff.
All right, I'm gonna transition out of this, but I will throw you a bone, Tom. So, two things about breast milk that I find fascinating is, one, there's a black market for it.
Yes, there is.
Apparently, if you know the right people and you know how to get it to move around, you know, kind of under the cover of, you know, I guess the federal authorities, like the FDA, I guess, investigates this, tries to like stop, you know, people from, you know, buying breast milk from other people. Apparently, worth a lot of money. And I've been trying to figure out how to get into the breast milk market so my wife can work from home, as it were, and make a lot more money.
This is the worst conversation.
I will.
Literally the worst conversation I've ever heard in my entire life is happening right now.
You've never had one breast milk conversation. I find that hard to believe. I think it comes up at least once in every man's life.
I don't want to hear about two men's wives' breast milk for 10 minutes on a magic podcast.
It's getting worse. So allegedly, not allegedly, I guess for real, I guess there is a chef in New York who figured out how to make cheese from human breast milk. And that was like a thing. So not only is there a black market for this stuff, but there's a black market for apparently chefs that want to make their own artisanal human breast milk cheese.
Yeah, I found a link to it. It was in 2010. It was a New York chef, restaurateur Daniel Angerer, posted his formula for maple caramelized pumpkin encrusted cheese in his blog, and it mentions using breast milk, which is disturbing.
So now that I've thrown you a bone, Tom, and this horse too has been beaten into a pulp, I think it's time to close the episode out, don't you?
Okay. Yeah, and that's your job. So have fun.
All right, so I'm the_Stibs, STYBS on Twitter. Adam Szymorski, you can find me on Command Tower and Daily MTG. You can find me all over GatheringMagic.com. And sometimes I ask strange questions on Twitter, so follow me there. Conley?
Oh, he's still here.
Yeah, I just got back from the bathroom where I threw up. you can get my Twitter at Conley81, CONLEY81. Content on channelfireball.com and tcgplayer.com, and yep, that's it.
Has there been any new, can you talk or give us any sort of release date for your digital gaming card product you're working on, or is that still shrouded in mystery?
We had a podcast last week, so.
Well, I didn't ask last week.
No, it will not. When it comes out, you will know. I will be using this podcast as advertising for my game.
You will know about it.
You won't have to beat it out of me. I will literally go, hey, guys, check out this sweet new game you should all play, and then you'll all know it is out.
And then we'll link back to this podcast saying that no other game can touch Magic. And it'll just be like, huh, what do you make of that?
I mean, no other game except for ours, obviously.
But I mean, are you guys going to be doing like previews, almost like Magic does? I guess I'm not sure how other games like to do, I guess, promotion. Obviously, people seem to love preview cards for Magic sets.
Hey, Tom, how about you let me figure this stuff out with my coworkers, and then when we get it all done, you'll just know, because we'll show you it.
Okay. That works. I mean, I truly have no power over it, so. Yeah.
We're like trying to figure out pay model stuff. They're like, well, how do you advertise? What your preview weeks look like? Like, come on, give me a break.
Hey, you need big idea people, and you need the really detailed people ideas. And play mats. I mean, what are you gonna do about your
Tom?
Play mats?
Where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at PSG Reader, or you can email. I love getting emails and send them to mtgpopery@gatheringmagic.com. And I don't write anything anywhere. So you can't really find me in any other website. So tough luck, I guess. Does anybody know what's going on with MTGcast? Is it still around these days? I honestly haven't gone to it for a while.
I think I listened to some like old podcasts that were on there recently, but I don't know if it was through that site or if they were just like archived somewhere.
Okay. I was just kind of curious. It's one of those things where you work on something for a long time, then you move on, and you're just like, I wonder what happened.
It's still a thing as far as I know. I mean, I think it changed hands from Chris, and it's still a host. I mean, it's a place to go. You know, I think that the podcasting community has matured in the sense that you know, there are other services for hosting podcasts and with WordPress plugins and a bunch of other features where it's really easy to kind of get a cast up and going almost anywhere now.
You don't need the support that you used to. Yeah, because I mean, now there's just so much more resources to do it for free to very little money, you know, every month, which is cool. You guys think I go off tangent? I'm just looking. Apparently, I didn't know Monday Night Magic is still going. They're up to episode 414. That is insanity. But the title for 413 is The Polarity of the Dildos. So I have to say, they may have gone more off tangent than I normally do. In my defense, that is something I've never uttered on a podcast. So I would argue there's not really any. Well, I guess there is polarity. There is sort of a.
I haven't listened to it.
So, Tom, as a fellow caster, I think that sounds like a challenge. Like, you know, you get to name podcast episodes. That sounds like a challenge to kind of go over the top of that.
Like a Mobius tangent. Sorry, that's just too good. That one I have to use.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
But there we go. That's cool. Well, again, Adam Conley, thank you again for joining me. I truly enjoy this. Otherwise, I wouldn't babble this much. So hopefully you guys had fun as well. And we're actually recorded 2 weeks in a row. So that's kind of a round of applause for us. Do you guys could apparently care less, but that is cool. Yep. I am happy about it.
Don't give a shit.
I can care less. I'm only here because of I don't get anything. I don't know why.
The free booze.
The free, just all the men and ladies you want, but I haven't gotten any ladies yet. Just the guys. Oh, okay, Kat. There you go. Almost had the mic taken.
Thanks for making an appearance.
The mic almost got taken out by a white guy there. But so, guys, thank you again. Join us, hopefully. Monday after. It's always weird that we record Thursdays, but it comes up on Monday. So I never should refer to dates, but join us hopefully the Monday you listen to this, and you'll join us the Monday after that for another. I'm assuming the next episode will be probably more special than this episode. So you should probably tune in.
Even more special.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of a linear curve of specialness, but it keeps going up. Inflation.
I'm going to assume it's going to be less special just
because you're the pessimist of our podcast, which is okay.
I'm not a pessimist. I'm the realist.
You're the yang to my yin.
I'm the realist there is around, mofo.
Do you want to be the yang? Yang or the yin? Which one do you want? The yin realist. Or the yang?
Give it real. XFL. You two be the yin and yang, and I'll be that realist mofo on the cast. Down with it.
Down real. With it. Yeah. Your career as a rap artist.
I'm just
going
to get us to segue all the way through. So thanks again. Oh. And remember, send us emails at mtgpopery@gatheringmagic.com. We'll see you next week.
Send the magic, real ones my way.
Put the magic in you every week.
Real.